welcome to episode 59 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Treffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by Daniel Brennick. Daniel and I met at an Ed Camp a couple months ago, and while I was looking for a guest to join me for a live episode, and he jumped at the chance. We had some great conversations at the Ed Camp, and they continued onto this show. This was also part of the Voice Ed Radiothon that aired last week as this is releasing, and because of that, the sound quality isn't quite as great as I would usually like, and there are some technical difficulties, especially at the end, but the conversation I still think is worth it. Daniel and I talk about the differences between public schools and charter schools, technology in the classrooms and one-to-one programs, the problems with the way school is portrayed, connecting classrooms to the outside world, and the power of high expectations. So, sit back and enjoy episode 59 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Daniel Brennick. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this live edition of the Planning Period Podcast. I am your host, as always, Brad Treffler, and super excited to be here with Voice Ed Radio and talking live on the air. I feel like it's been a really long time since I've been live on Voice Ed, and I don't know why. Partly because it's been the summer, and I've been busy, and I've been enjoying my summer a lot, and there's been some new developments that I'll be talking about in some future episodes of the podcast there as well, but it's been interesting, and I'm excited to be live on the air again, talking to my new friend Daniel Brennick. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing good. First week of school, so I'm a little tired.
But understatement of the year.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking a little bit before we went on air. You just started back as well, right? You're back this week as well. Yeah,
yes, sir. Last Friday.
Wow, that's awesome. How do you like starting on a Friday?
It literally the strangest experience of all time, but it was nice because you just got in, you got to meet the kids, and then you got a solid 2-day break to sort of refresh and get going on Monday.
Huh. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting start. But I guess, you know, I probably am getting ahead of myself. Could you, for my audience, please just introduce yourself a little bit?
Okay. My name is Daniel Brennick. I am the ed tech lead at a small charter school in Tampa, Florida. I've been teaching since January 2008, started out teaching special ed elementary, moved into middle school science 7 or 8 years ago, got into ed tech probably 3 or 4 years ago, and have really been diving headfirst into that like a bull in a china shop since then, trying to get as much done as I can.
Great, great. If you know how, could maybe turn your mic down just a little bit. You're coming through a little loud. Steven's a little concerned. the father of voice ed back there, working the boards, as it were.
Well, I'll give you the... Let me tell you why I'm concerned is because when Leanne Hansen got on early this morning with Ramona Maharg, they both took us off the air because if we peak too much, it just shuts down. So, are you, Daniel, can I just interrupt for a sec, Brett?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So, Daniel, are you on a Mac or a PC?
I'm actually on a Chromebook at the moment.
Oh, okay. Are there sound settings that you can just bring your input volume down? Did they allow you to
do
that?
Well, I'm working on moving the microphone a little bit further away. Let me go ahead and jump into the settings here.
The other option, Brad, is if you turn your mic up, I can balance them.
All right. I can. That's easy to do if you want to. Mm.
There we go.
I got to remember which way is the gain on my mic.
You're using
testing.
There we go. Okay, testing. Good. I think we're going to be good. Let's do it there.
All right. Good. Sorry about that. Thanks, Stephen. I it's funny, actually, this morning I listened to one of the first shows on Voice Ed Radiothon, and I heard Stephen say right around 8 o'clock, he said, oh, this is going so smoothly, as he went to the next guest. And less than 2 seconds later, the hosts were like, yeah, we can't hear you, Stephen. I don't know what you're saying. Are you there?
I think I saw that on Twitter this morning.
Yeah, it's good. I love it. And like Stephen said, it's the behind-the-scenes stuff that happens here at Voice Ed. It's exciting. So, all right, so let's pick up where we left off. So you're big into ed tech, and I think that's awesome. You're at a charter school, which I feel like charter schools, at least in the U.S., are kind of a controversial thing. So could you maybe tell me a little bit about what that experience has been like for you?
Yeah, of course. So first, point of reference, I've actually never worked at a district school, but I've worked at two distinctly different charter schools. And I think this is where the controversy comes in. Without saying too much or trying to stir up too much. There are some charter schools that, appear, at least on paper, to be profit driven as they are managed by large companies. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where the controversy comes from, that people see that and they feel like a significant amount of money is going to those companies. I'm not too sure about how that works, but I know that my school is an independent school. We don't have a management company. And, you know, every dollar that comes in from our students stays in our school and doesn't go elsewhere.
So it the mission, I think that's what it is. It's sort of, it feels a lot of times like the mission of a charter school is diluted or convoluted as a result of sort of this money equation, right? And so
yes. Yeah, and I've spoken to many public school teachers, and they all sort of, well, traditional school teachers, I should say, that there's this prevailing thing that we're taking money out of their pockets sometimes. And I totally understand that. I totally sympathize with them. I just don't feel that in most cases that is the legitimate truth.
Yeah. You know, I forget who I was talking to. It might even have been you, because we did meet at Ed Camp Magic a few months ago, right at the beginning of our summer. And I don't remember, maybe it was you that we were talking about that same thing, where it's almost like there has been this thing created that it's like public school versus charter school versus private school, instead of looking at those as varied options for our varied types of learners.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a weird thing that's been created.
I mean, everyone's trying to accomplish the same goal, right? We want to educate kids and we want to help build a better society. And for some kids, the private school works wonderfully for that. Some kids, the public school works phenomenal. You know, I'm the last person who would ever bash on our local public schools. They do a wonderful job. But every once in a while, you're going to catch a kid who maybe the traditional setting isn't the best place for them, and they can't afford a private school. So why not have a free public option for that child?
Yeah, I think that works. I think that's good. It is odd. I almost don't know where I stand on it, right? Because you know, you take all the different sides of the argument. But I like the idea that there's another option out there for our students. I think one of the struggles that I think I deal with as a public school teacher is that charter schools don't exactly have to sort of follow the rules we follow. They don't deal with a lot of the red tape we deal with. And yet they're often still directly compared on either the same or similar tests and same or similar metrics as a public school. And I think that's where it can feel kind of unfair to say, oh, well, we're doing so great in this, this, and this. And it's because they have completely different requirements and expectations above us. So I think that's where it maybe adds to the conflict.
I mean, I'm going to sort of disagree with you there a little bit about the completely different standards thing, because the comparisons, for the most part, come from the test scores, right? You know, what it takes for one school to become an A school, whether it's public or private or charter rather, is, because private doesn't take the test, is the same test score. We take the FSA here in Florida and we're tested on the same standards, and our teachers are sort of gauged by a very similar metric as the teachers in the district. Now, where it sort of divides is that we do have some flexibility in, say, our curriculum maps, where I know a lot of my district teachers are given, we have 2 weeks to teach this subject, 2 weeks to teach that subject. I have a little bit more wiggle room, and the administration has a little bit more wiggle room as far as picking a curriculum to help meet the same state standards. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think I agree, and I see the value there. I don't think it's necessarily a condemnation of charter schools as my point. Right. I think it's more of a question of why do public schools need to be so rigidly structured in a way that makes it harder for us to compete, even if it is a fake competition, if that makes any sense.
No, I see where you're coming from, and I completely agree with you. You know, and public schools there's also the public magnets, which adds a whole different twist to this. You know, they're almost the charter school of public schools, the traditional school.
Okay. Well, and, so we have a complicated system, to say the least. And as we're on a Canadian radio network, I can't imagine that they have a lot of point of comparison, although they have their own kind of choice system in place too. So,
okay. Yeah, I imagine the rest of the world looks at our education system and is sometimes just completely confounded.
Definitely. I don't blame them. I look at our education system and I'm often confounded. So,
yeah.
We were also talking a little bit before we went on air that you guys are starting your one-to-one in middle school. Mm-hmm. And you were telling me you did kind of an interesting sort of setup with how you guys set that up. So how is that working for you?
Okay, well, you know, with any public entity, you know, funding is not always the easiest to come by. And we have done a pretty phenomenal job trying to push towards one-to-one with the money that we get from, you know, state or federal funding for our students. But, you know, when really push came to shove, the math wasn't there, that it wasn't fully going to happen. So we sort of jumped out on a limb and we put out a feeler survey over the summer, asking students and parents if they would like to get into this buy-in program where we offer them a Chromebook at actually slightly below market value. And the Chromebook was slightly better than the ones that we had on campus, if they would like to participate in it to help us get closer to one-to-one. Our target was 50 middle school kids. If we had 50 middle school kids get in there, we could get one-to-one this year. And we had 120 sign up, like almost immediately. Within a week, we had to say, okay, we need to slow this down. Let's shut down orders for right now and see if we can handle this. So, I mean, that has been a really cool experience because there's this sort of excitement about it. We just got the Chromebooks yesterday and I had my tech team kids along with my IT guy and another one of the big tech guys on campus helping set them up today. And we're going to distribute tomorrow and hopefully the kids love their awesome new Chromebooks.
So what do you think about how much of a struggle do you think it's going to be with students having the two different devices? Are they spec wise that much different that a classroom teacher will notice like, okay, I got to wait for the quote slow kids?
No, I think as far as speed, because the Chrome OS actually requires so little from RAM that the ones we've been using on campus already get the job done really quickly. These ones have a little bit extra oomph. They have the feature where the screen folds over and it can become a touch screen. But I don't think that's either going to speed up or slow down the productivity compared to the other kids who have the rank and file Chromebook.
Awesome. And I'm sure, I mean, I assume you guys put in research and picked devices that were going to be fairly equivalent just so that you don't run into that issue.
Right.
I think I always worry sometimes and I don't know. I always am hit or miss on this because that gap between, you know, the sort of haves and the have nots always worries me. But if it's more of a flashy features for the upgraded model, that's probably not an issue. So I think that's good.
I actually think the biggest appeal to it is that they get to take that Chromebook home where the other kids leave it here at the end of the day, you know, so the massive features aren't that big of an upgrade, but this leads with me is awesome. Yeah.
Okay. So your teachers the harder part then becomes your teachers who are not doing digital activities as their homework necessarily for the teachers, so students who don't have those.
Yeah. And, you know, actually another curveball here from a charter school, we are a no homework school. So when the Chromebook leaves, it's mostly just for them to do whatever they want on. Like I mentioned while we were talking earlier, during the off hours, our management software sort of scales back on what is permissible and what is not. You know, during school hours, they're limited to certain websites, certain tasks, that goes away, and it becomes more to a tool for socializing or emailing and getting their own stuff done at home.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, it seems like you guys have definitely thought this through pretty effectively. That's good. And so as a charter school, do you have a larger role in the planning of this as a even, you know, as a
So yeah, I think at a charter school, because our population is smaller, and our administration is then smaller, a lot of our teachers have to wear a couple of extra hats. So the hat I wear is sometimes tech support. It is the ed tech lead, where I'm sort of giving trainings on using certain products or sending out frequent emails, reminding people how to use the products and the products that they need to use. So yeah, it's a different role than just being an in the classroom teacher. Certainly consumes a lot of time too.
Yeah, I can imagine. Even falling into my role, it was because I had been doing so much of that as a classroom, full-time classroom teacher. And I said, this is just a little much. So you're going to make me a full-time coach. And luckily for me, that worked out.
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet. It was several years ago where I was helping managing a lot of the software on campus and a lot of the hardware on campus. And we didn't have an on-site tech guy. I remember sitting in my classroom after work at like 3 o'clock, and I had 20 new PCs that I was setting up. I'm like, all right, this is not working for me. So I say, let's get somebody in here. And luckily we found a college age guy who is just absolutely brilliant. And he has come in and been a pure rock star for our campus, a pure asset.
Cool. I like it. Well, we've been talking for a little bit, and I want to get to my first question, because I want to talk a little more about education and some of the big picture stuff. So the first question I always ask my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
So I knew this question was coming, because you mentioned this. This was actually a session that you did at Ed Camp Magic, and it got pretty heated in discussion, if I remember correctly. And that's where the whole charter versus traditional versus private thing came up. And I mentioned that it's this divisiveness, this lack of unity between teachers. And it doesn't begin with the teachers. It doesn't begin with administration. So frequently it actually begins with one politician or another on either side of the aisle trying to get votes from one group of teachers. That sort of drives this wedge between us. Now, that is a big issue with me personally, but I don't think it is the biggest issue in education altogether. When I really had time to sit down and think about it today and just look at my kids and talk to my students and talk to some of my coworkers, I think we're dealing with a population of kids here in America who maybe don't see what we're doing in school as relevant. They're not making the connections. And part of that is because our culture has changed and our system hasn't changed quickly enough to match up with it and to really help them create the connections between what you're doing in science class and what you might be doing in the future, or what you're doing in math class and how that's going to help you later on. So I think that making it relevant for the kids is what will help get us maybe back to a higher standing, back to where we used to be as a top dog in the education world.
Not
what you were expecting?
No, I mean, I think it is. I mean, I never know what to expect with that question. I never get the same answer twice, but we're dealing with kids who don't see this as relevant. But so then I think my question is why don't they see this as relevant? What are we doing wrong that is making that the case? Or what is who doing? What is someone else doing wrong? I don't know. Maybe it's not us.
That's so. I have a friend, a coworker from New Jersey. And we talk about the difference in New Jersey education and Florida education quite frequently. And he always described it as growing up in the shadow of really tall buildings. You saw those tall buildings growing up as a kid. You saw your dad or your mom going to work in those tall buildings. And that sort of became your idea of what the future was, right? you know, so your mom and dad had a degree or they went to high school or whatever, and they used that education in these really tall buildings and they got you a really nice house in New Jersey or whatever. You know, here in Florida, things were a little bit rural, and that really tall building thing wasn't there. So we focused different on education. The kids focused different on education. Now, fast forward 20, 30 years, and what are kids looking to as their future? A lot of them want to be YouTubers, right? A lot of them want to be sports stars, but that always was the case. I think there is this clear disconnect between, you know, there's no shadows of really tall buildings anymore. That's not what they're aspiring towards anymore. Maybe. Now, how do we adjust to that? That's not a question I can really answer. And I can't point a finger at anybody and say, okay, well, administration is doing it wrong because they're making us teach this way, or curriculum companies are doing it wrong because they're not building the curriculum that engages the students, or teachers aren't being engaging enough. I think we really need to sort of roll back and just sort of reflect as a society, how do we make that connection? How do we get them interested in, you know, maybe pursuing academia and becoming, aspiring to something other than a YouTuber or a Fortnite streamer?
Yeah,
I'm really good as a teacher. I'm really good at pointing out problems, but not solutions. That's up to the audience to come to the solution.
Yeah, well, and I think that's fair. I think we want our students to find the solutions to our problems, so I think that's a fair mindset. I can see your point that sort of what we're aspiring to, and I wouldn't even point necessarily to just YouTubers or Instagram stars per se, but even people that are intelligent and brilliant, it's not because of the educational system they went through. You know, you think about the Mark Zuckerbergs and the Google, right? and all those. It wasn't the schooling that no part of that is their story, right? Like, their story of achieving greatness never is about the schooling that they went through. It's the thing they did on the side while they were in school. That's the thing that was successful, not the school.
Yeah, and the school was just sort of the backdrop that these great things occurred in. You know, I've never seen the movie about Mark Zuckerberg, The Social Network, but I doubt it had many references of his college professors in there. Now, could be wrong though.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen that one either. Everyone's always surprised when I tell them that. I can see that. I can see that that's not part of it. And interestingly, I recently started a segment on my show where we do educational movie reviews, where we take movies that are about education and watch them and then review them with a classroom lens of, like, could you actually apply this in your classroom? And when I started thinking about the movies to review, even in our current genre of movies and our current releases of movies, there's not a lot of movies about education in the recent past. You got to go back to the 90s, really, to hit the big time education movies.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to think, and there's not many that I can actually think of off the top of my head. The Dead Poets Society, maybe. Dangerous.
Even that one. Yeah, but I mean, even those have been from a while ago. I mean,
yeah, exactly. It's
the Stand and Deliver.
Stand and Deliver. Yeah, that's a good one.
But yeah, it's tough, right? Like, they're not it isn't something that we glorify in our society by any stretch.
That's something I never thought of. These kids aren't getting the glamorization of being successful in school in a scenario where you were designed to not be successful, like we got with Dangerous Minds or Stand and Deliver. Interesting.
I don't know that I've thought about that so much until right now. So we're coming up with ideas. See, we don't have to just give problems. We can come up with thoughts.
All right.
So what we need is some great movies about education. We need that first. And then we also need to look at education. So what are some of the things you think? Actually, I'm going to rephrase that sentence because that's not the way to ask it. I'm going to go instead to my second question, and maybe you'll address what I was going to ask anyways. And my second question for my guests is always, what is something you're doing that you wish all teachers would do?
Okay. So my big drive is for connected education. I visited a lot of schools where they have these like pen pals with people in China, or they're working on projects with other campuses. And I think it's really cool. And I think that's a way to take what you're doing and making it relevant to the kids. So I sort of dabbled in this last year. We had a makerspace challenge with two other schools in our state, two private schools, one in Miami and one in Orlando. We connected on Google Hangouts. We broadcasted it live on YouTube. And we had this 45-minute long building competition. The kids were to design and build propeller-powered cars and then see which one could run a track the fastest. And it was a really, really interesting experience for the kids. And the fact that we broadcast it out there to our students and to our parents on YouTube, I had students coming to me asking to be a part of the next one. I had students going to the art teacher and engaging in the same engineering challenge that they'd saw the other kids engage in. So it sort of created this buzz and around this education activity and made it at least somewhat relevant to what they wanted to do with their lives. So I'm hoping through creating a connection, we get a little bit more engagement in the education process. This year, I've teamed up with, I think the count is 18 schools across the country, and one in Canada, a Catholic school in Canada, I believe, a home school in Georgia, some schools in California. And we're just taking daily weather readings and sharing them with each other on a spreadsheet. And then each school takes that data and sort of interprets it to or towards their own learning goals. My kids are really excited about it. And it's literally just taking the temperature every day and recording it, then looking at it later and comparing it to other parts of the country. But now they get to engage in actual real science. So the thing becomes relevant to them. It's a relevant learning experience. So that's cool stuff that I'm doing. And connected education is what I wish more people would do more. Wish I had more teachers reaching out to me to do it, and I wish I had more teachers willing to do it when I reached out to them for it.
Well, you're speaking to the world right now, so I think you can probably use this as a way to find some other schools to join in this journey and raise that number up. So if you're listening, you can definitely reach out to Daniel, and we'll share his contact information here at the end before we leave. But
thank you,
so you can definitely do that. But yeah, okay, I like that. I like that. And when you talk about, you know, that the students looking in the shadows or living in the shadows, if we're going to make this relevant and important to our students, I can definitely agree that connecting the outside world is a way to accomplish that. And for anybody that hasn't done it, I think I've talked before on the show about, you know, having my students, my high school students last year start their own podcast. And the day we did a conversation over Zencastr with a middle school class in Canada, you should have seen how excited they were. And to me, it made no sense because they were just having a phone call. Like, you guys use your phones every single day. Why are you so excited? And they're like, it's because it's another class and we're having a conversation. And I'm like, yeah, but I mean, you could do this anytime. Like, still, even for these 17 and 18 year old kids, it was mind blowing to them that this was something they could do. And they were so engaged in that activity. And it wasn't any real work for me. I found a teacher and said, hey, let's chat.
Right. So isn't that interesting that it's something that they can do quite easily in their real life outside of school? And the fact that they're doing it at school is like this most amazing thing. I think that speaks to the disconnect that has been created in their minds that school isn't real life. So the things we do at school don't match up with the things we do outside of school.
Yeah. And even with what you're doing, though, they're not notating the weather every single day in their real life, right? Like, they're not writing the temperature down and tracking that over time. But, and they could easily look up the weather in all of the places you have people. Like, it wouldn't be any harder for them to just type in the city and see the weather themselves there. And yet it still has more value because there are other humans on the other side of that technology.
And there are other humans like them. They're not getting it from a meteorologist. They're getting it from a high schooler in Missouri and a fifth grader in Oklahoma. You know, I think it's really cool. And so do they.
I think that's awesome. And I, you know, I wish, I'm with you. I wish way more people would take advantage of that and recognize that the technology doesn't just allow us to save paper, but it allows us to do something so much more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And, so what are your favorite tools for connecting? I should ask that. You know, I know it sounds like you're using maybe Google Sheets, I would assume, for the spreadsheeting, or?
Yeah, exactly. We are a G Suite school, so we use, of course, Google Docs and Google Sheets and all those collaboration tools, and then Google Classroom. But then there's other cool tools that are sort of less, I guess they're not less known anymore. Things like Flipgrid, which has been huge, blew up the last year and is now free for all teachers. If you're not using Flipgrid yet, you should be using Flipgrid. And I know that a lot of teachers use Flipgrid sort of just in their own classroom. So they share ideas between kids in their class. But you can connect Flipgrid to other classes on your campus, to other schools. You can engage in the Flip Pals or the Grid Pals program and connect with other teachers. And you can really do some powerful things in connecting and amplifying student voice with this really simple to use tool. Have you ever used Flipgrid? Do you know what I'm talking about, or is this?
I do, absolutely. Right. It was all the buzz out at ISTE the last 2 years. It's the big thing out at the conference because everybody's all excited about it. And it is. It's really cool. And with it becoming free and adding, you know, one of the things that they did with that Microsoft partnership is put password protection on every grid. And I think that, while a little frustrating because I can't show as many examples as I used to when I talk about it, it is nice to protect student data. And I think that part of it is really cool. So, yeah, I think Flipgrid is tremendously powerful. And that actually goes back to me to the whole they want to be a YouTuber. And doing something they could do themselves, because when they start talking to a camera, it's amazing how differently they react to talking to a camera than they would talking to you in class.
Mm-hmm. It's like the confidence of some kids increases tenfold. You know, a kid that would never raise their hand in class to speak is filling up all 2 minutes of a video, sharing wonderful ideas.
Have you ever done a PD on Flipgrid with your staff?
I have not.
It is one of the funniest experiences because I immediately will make them, one of the first things I do is I let them see a grid that's got a bunch of responses on it, but then I will have them, I'll send them to a grid I've done and ask them a question about whatever we're talking about and have them do their own. And adults clam up and shut down as soon as you put the camera in front of them. And I have to explain to them that that's not how students react to this tool.
Right.
And it shows the difference so clearly between how students respond to something and how teachers do. It's very, very funny. You should try it sometime.
So another interesting thing about my school, I think we just sort of got lucky, and we have a lot of adults who do not clam up. Like our drama department is bigger than it needs to be because we have so many people who are just about it. You know, our tech guys, the other guy I mentioned earlier was helping me set up the Chromebooks, is always on Facebook Live talking to parents, or always posting on his Instagram story. So we have a lot of teachers that are just ready to get out there and share whatever it is. But you're probably right. If I had everybody, there are a couple of teachers who I know have no problem talking in the staff lounge, will probably clam up in that situation.
Yeah, it just shows that dichotomy between what students do and what adults do. And I always explain to them that this is a great example of recognizing where your students are coming from, because they are that, you know, I hate this phrasing. I hate calling anything a named generation just as a personal aside, but that they're like the selfie generation, right? Like that talking to their phones and videos of themselves is what they do all day. Every day. They're not uncomfortable in front of a camera like we are. We want to make sure it looks right and it's the right angles. And we got to, you know, we grew up with the MySpace angles. You got to get up and to the left and you got to do the whole thing. But they don't worry so much about that stuff, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that's sort of maybe the nicer way to say it is that they're digital natives, right? So this is the world that they were born into, where you and I had to learn this stuff and go through painful experiences on MySpace and finding out you weren't in your girlfriend's top eight and all that good stuff. And they don't have that.
We have lost a large portion of our audience with this conversation. Like, what the heck are they talking about? I'm not saying stop. I just think it's hilarious.
Yeah. So, our experiences are so much different. Even like where you think there would be overlap, it is significantly different from what these kids have known their whole life. So yeah, that whole selfie generation or digital native has a huge impact on how they interact with the technology at school and how they interact with their lessons.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man, we are rolling right through. I'm going to go to one more question. I really like a lot what you said. I think that we definitely have some issues with the way that students are viewing education and that they are not making those connections to its value and taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. I think that goes to a societal issue. I think if we can bring more of what they are comfortable with outside of school into the classroom, that is one step in the process. I don't think it's the end all to be all, but I agree. I think if we're exploding those walls, if we're connecting people beyond just the classroom space, I still think that's a great way to get started, at least making them recognize the value of education. Yeah. So I think you're on the right track for sure. But I want to go to my third question, and this one gets a little more personal. And my third question for all my guests is always, who is the best teacher you have ever had?
Oh my gosh, I put this out on Facebook and I hope she's listening. And I always like to comment towards her on Teacher Appreciation Day. She was my 11th and 12th grade language arts teacher. Now goes by the name of Miss Nelson, but back then she was Miss Capono. So like many teachers, great students don't always make great teachers, right? So I was not the most phenomenal student. Sort of floated by quietly in the back of class, being happy with whatever grade I got from minimal effort. And Miss Capono did not accept that. She always wanted to push me harder, push me further. And where it might have come across as harsh to some of my friends, to me, it came across as, you know what, I had a teacher who really gave a darn. And there are a lot of teachers that really gave a darn. I had a lot of great teachers growing up. But for some reason, Ms. Capono really drove that point home. And even after I graduated and left that school, when we'd come back and talk, she always communicated high expectations of me. And I think that really shaped who I became as a person later on in life.
And was it, I mean, I'm going to ask an obvious question, but I'm assuming the expectations went beyond just, you know, grading components and that part of it, right? I mean, just beyond just learning the content and getting A's and right marks.
Yeah. She was one of those people who didn't want me selling myself short anywhere in life. You know, I sort of remember me being excited, but feeling the disappointment in her voice when she found out that I only applied to one college. You know, she's happy that I got in, but then when she asked, okay, so what about the rest of your applications? I wasn't feeling disappointment in her voice. It was seeing anger in her face that really let me know I had screwed up. But yeah, she drove me to be a better person, and she sort of used literature and poetry to do that, communicating high expectations for that. Always, you can do better. You know, I think when you have in-depth conversations with somebody, where they know your depth of thought and they know your depth of emotion. And then for a poetry project, you hand in something that you had thrown together the night before. They know you're not putting your full effort towards it, you know, and she didn't let that slide by. So thank you, Ms. Nelson, Ms. Capono, Michelle, you're awesome.
You call her by her first name?
Now I do. I mean, geez, I'm 24 years old. I graduated a long time ago. I'm not 24. I'm sorry. I realize that you guys can't see me and can't actually judge how old I really am.
It's funny. I still don't call any of my former teachers by their first name. And I've worked with some of them before and I still don't call them by their first name. It makes me uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah, I can't do it. I don't know why.
So like I said, I was kind of not the best student. So I think almost as this air of flippantness, I would sometimes call some of my teachers by their first name, like in middle school and high school. It's really painful to admit that sort of stuff because I would not tolerate that from my students now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was not the best behaved student. So I think sometimes we are definitely not the not always the model children are the ones that become teachers, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, at least in my regard, I was rebelling against a system that I didn't totally think was working for me. I felt like my kids now that it doesn't always seem relevant. And that drove me then to be like, okay, have you ever seen the movie SLC Punk?
No, I don't think I have.
Okay. Anyway, sorry. short derail here. SLC Punk's about a punk growing up to be a lawyer or whatever. He's all anarchist in his youth or whatever, but he decides as an adult that he can not necessarily do damage to the system, but change the system to his liking from within. You have more power inside the system trying to influence change than you do standing outside of it and just, you know, angrily protesting. So that student who is protesting the system as a kid or actively disengaged in the system, if that's a phrase, sort of had that moment of clarity of like, you know what, I could really do better from the inside and I could probably help build a better system for my kids that I will one day have. And now I do have.
I wish I could claim some sort of lofty aspiration like that, or that I had some sort of reason to be a not great student. I just think I was bored. I don't know, not even bored. I just don't think I cared. I don't know. I just didn't really work all that hard in school. And I got good grades, but I just don't think I tried all that hard. I think I was one of those teachers that I imagine as a classroom teacher now, I would be annoyed with any student that was like me because yeah. I know I didn't try hard, but I still got good grades and I just sort of played the game of it. And,
right.
And I think that I would be annoyed by any student that is like me. And then sometimes I am. I sometimes have students who I'm like, you're a lot like me and I don't want to be annoyed by you, but because I understand, but I'm also still annoyed by you.
Right. Right. Oh, that's funny. You know, I might actually just be projecting all these very adult thoughts and aspirations onto my youth self. This could be total malarkey. I was just lazy and played too much video games. That's the truth.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. All right. Well, I reached out a little bit on Twitter and I was seeing, since we're on a live show, and again, if you're listening at this point, you are listening to Voice Ed Radio's, I think third or fourth radiothon. I can't remember. I think it's the third radiothon. We're like 17 or 18 hours straight of live content and doing all kinds of cool stuff. And if you check out on Twitter, you can check out Voice Ed Radio on Twitter at Voice Ed Canada, at Voice Ed Canada. There's a link to a GoFundMe as they try to raise a little bit of money to keep this place going. It is a nonprofit. They don't make any money or profit from any way from all the work. And I can tell you, Stephen Hurley puts in a ton of work in Voice Ed Radio, including reading random tweets that I put out while we're live on air. And he has a question for you, Daniel. So I went out and I asked for some questions from some of my Twitter followers, and he's got one for you. He says, I would love to hear one of those stories that keeps Daniel going, one of those high point stories that he carries with him, an aspiration. This is why I do it story. So do you have one of those moments you can share with us?
So, I got to think about that for a little bit. Recently, for the first couple of years of my teaching in science, and it still persists, because I have three daughters, I had this big thing about, making my female students more engaged in science. I had read somewhere, the statistic that, if you don't get a girl interested in science by the eighth grade, they will never be interested in science. And I taught seventh grade, so I thought I had the perfect opportunity to intervene. And I tried to reach out to the girls without alienating the boys and tried to get them engaged and tried to make them realize how awesome they were at science, even though there might be some societal beliefs that they shouldn't be. Anyway, so I had this one student, Sabrina, great kid, totally hilarious. awesome in my class, awesome at science. When she was graduating eighth grade, I recommended her for the science award. She came back this past year as she's entering her first year in college, and she is going to study environmental science at our local university with the idea of course, being an environmentalist. And I thought that was really awesome. I've probably imagined that I had a much larger impact on her life than I did, but just the idea that maybe I helped get this kid along. Also, another really great story that I actually tell my kids all the time, and I told kids today, somehow some group of kids get into their heads that they're the dumb class, right? So they look around and there's a lot of goofballs, and it happens every couple of years. I have a kid approach me as we're setting out expectations, or if we're beginning our first investigation, they say, "Mr. Brennick, I don't know if you realize this, but we're the dumb class." And I treat all of my classes as if they are advanced classes, and I explain that to them. So I had a class 5 years ago, maybe, where a young lady who is awesome, who actually came back and visited me recently, stood up the second day of school and did the whole, "Mr. Brennick, we're the dumb class," and the whole class laughed and whatever. But I made sure that they knew that my expectations were not going to waver. I wrote down in my journal, "On this day, this student said, we are the dumb class," at 10:05 a.m., whatever. So, last day of school, I bring up some statistics. For the last two quarters, they had 100% homework completion because we were a homework school at the time. And they had 100% of their classwork turned in. They had the highest test average, and they had the highest quiz average of all of my classes. So they had the highest average of all of my classes. They cheered themselves on or whatever. And then I flipped to that page in my journal, and I had that student read her quote. And she refused to believe that she said it. The rest of the class didn't remember saying it. Their paradigm had shifted so much just from putting in all the effort. They didn't even remember calling themselves the dumb class. You know, I thought that was really powerful. And that sort of validated in me that, okay, I might be pushing these kids to the point where they're frustrated. I might be pushing them harder than they've been pushed before. At science, even though I think the teacher before me does an awesome job pushing these kids as well. So maybe it's a combined effort of the two of us, you know, but they.
You were telling the story and you did get to the end of it. So I was starting to explain my response to it as I crashed out. So I think it is so powerful to me how you were able to. First of all, let's start with the girl who is going into environmental science. I think it's awesome. There is well documented a lack of girls in science and in technology fields. And I think it's really awesome that you were able to have that impact earlier on in her educational career that then followed her all the way 4 or 5 years later into making a college choice. And I think that's just so awesome. And I agree, you know, with Stephen asked for those moments that keep you going, those, you know, that was cool kind of thing. That's those, right? Those individual, wow, I know it worked with this one. I know that this one kid appreciates what I did. And I think those have such a profound effect on us as teachers, kind of making us feel like we did it right. You know, it makes us feel like we did the right thing.
Yeah.
And I think the other example you gave, the getting a whole class to rewrite their paradigm, that's amazing. That is so cool. And I think it's hilarious that they didn't even remember saying that they were the stupid class. But I think that the being, like you said, Tom, it's not the shining moment you can point to as much. It is still very powerful in terms of knowing that what you're doing is working. And I think that's awesome. So thank you for sharing both of those stories. I think that was super awesome. No.
I'm here.
I don't know what's going on, Stephen.
I am here. I don't know. And I've tested my Wi-Fi. I'm kind of solid here, but I don't know. I hope I'm not the reason you're kicking it.
I don't know.
It's
I don't know. Well, I'm going to say this much at least. While I know you and I are both on, I want to at least give a chance to shout out Daniel. Thank you, Daniel, again, for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I know you can find him on Twitter. He's at Daniel Brennick, DanielBrennick. And if you're listening to the recorded, links to that will, of course, be on the show notes. And you can always find me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler. And don't forget to check out the Voice Ed Radiothon's GoFundMe page. And I think that's definitely a worthwhile cause. And I know I love this network. I wish I have been on more recently, but now the school year is back up. I can get back in a routine and I'll start joining you guys more often. If you'll have me after the technical difficulties I apparently cause when I'm on air.
Can I say that we've missed you in this space? And, I loved, usually, you know, 7:30 on a Friday morning getting this week's episode. tell me.
Yeah, that has been a little bad. I haven't even, this summer has been awful. Not awful. It's been great. It's just been busy. And I've getting episodes out days late on my own stream, let alone getting them to you. And so next month, when August wraps itself up and September starts up, we will be back to weekly releases and I will get them to you at the very last second on Friday morning. Again, as always. So we'll be back on a normal schedule with that, starting in September.
So tell me, do you have a couple minutes?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Tell me, are you going to be doing the Shref Tech podcast this year?
I have mentioned it to my new students. They are middle schoolers. They're a little bit younger. So I have to make sure I have permission from parents and that kind of stuff in a way I didn't necessarily before. But I want to keep it going. Yeah. I'm hoping that they will be interested in it when we get, once we get tech up and running and they're more comfortable, then I'm hoping they'll be interested in it. Some of them seemed excited about it. So I think, yeah, I think we'll have Studicotomy back as well. That one may not get till October, maybe a little bit later getting that one started again, but we definitely are looking to make that happen.
Well, you know, as we approach our second year anniversary in February, where we'll have another 24-hour, maybe we'll get up to 24 hours, although I had to go make myself a cup of coffee, and I don't drink coffee. it was either that or an IPA, and I know I'm going to save the IPA for the doc later on, but it would be cool to get your kids connected with Shauna Pollock's kids up at the Blue Sky School in Ottawa. We did a weekly podcast with them, and it turned out that Thursday was kind of the day that I looked forward to because we had a lot of student voice coming through on Thursdays.
Yeah, if I remember right, they were either on right before or right after us, right? I think they were like right around the same time we were on. Shauna's show was normally going on as well.
That's right. Yeah. And so, yeah,
so that worked out well.
That was a lot of fun. And we have a number of student podcasts coming on this year. So it'd be great to sort of start connecting some of these voices.
Yeah. Well, and like Daniel said earlier, you know, that connection between classes, getting them to realize that, you know, a phone call is the same thing, even if it's over the internet to someone you don't know. I mean, I think that's a really powerful thing to consider as well.
We'll bring back the old Bell telephone, reach out and touch someone ad campaign. You know that.
I don't really think we should do that in a school. I think that has some definite connotation.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought we had. Is Daniel back? Are you back, Daniel? No, he just looks like he's back. I see him on
just
my screen.
Just looks like it.
Yeah.
Huh. Weird. Well. I don't know what happened, but we got like 4 minutes left. I think we made it almost all the way to the end of our show.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And I'll just I'll give you the archive of this, and you can mess around with it. It'll be in one piece, but there will be a couple of gaps there that you can easily bring together.
Daniel, thank you so much for being on the show with me and working through the issues that we had. It was such a great conversation, and it's always fun to go live with people, so thanks. To connect with Daniel, you can find him on Twitter. He's at Daniel Brennick. If you have questions or comments about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler. Same on Instagram as well. And I love to hear from you guys there. If you'd be interested in being a guest on the show like Daniel, you can connect with me on either of those spots. Or check out the feedback page on my website that gives you some other options for feedback as well, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, convince none of your classes they are the stupid class. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.